Boom. Okay, we're back.
Hello.
I guess that's how we're starting. We're back from last time.
We're back from episode 2 with episode 3.
Yeah, I mean, that's how numbers work, so.
It goes a 1, it goes a 2, so, it goes a 3.
Keeping with our new tradition that we started after the season started, like, that's actually another tradition, is not having a plan.
Our tradition is not having traditions.
Yeah, and then coming up with one that we deem a tradition midway through.
A tradition is just dead people guilt-tripping you anyway. I don't want to do it.
That's true. That is true. Okay, so keeping with, like, I don't know what we coined this, but, like, unreasonable fear, anxiety, or whatever. This one, okay, this one I think I'm literally alone with. But it stems from the fact that, like, a lot of people have it. Okay, so, like, this year is basically a huge binge of true crime and, like, murder fucking documentaries. Like, everyone's been watching those this year and listening to, like, true crime podcasts.
It's like they call it, like, crime porn, right? Where everybody's like really into, like, you know, murder mystery shows.
Yeah, and, like, the quarantine saw, like, everyone get really into fucking serial killers and, like, and there was, like, Mindhunter and all that, and, like, but I've been like that for years, where I'm like, I just find this shit, like, super interesting. So I developed this weird fear based off of Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker.
Right, right.
Okay, so Richard Ramirez, in his interviews when he was caught, one of his statements was, they were like, why did you pick the places that you picked? And he's like, well, I just, if the door was unlocked, I just thought it was an invitation and I went in.
Yeah.
So I have this super OCD about locking everything at all times.
Okay.
Which I told you about that one time when I got really high one night and, like, locked my door 17 times, like, in a row.
Did you tell me that?
Yeah. I was, like, opening and shutting windows and locking them to make sure that they still worked.
Well, that's not anxiety. That's just OCD, right? That's just obsessive.
No, but I was, like, really high, and I was like, I don't think they're locked. Like, I'm going to get killed.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, like I think it was, like, the last time I got high, I didn't know if I was going to pee or not for a while.
I'd rather have that.
Yeah.
But so my fear is, it's not the intrusion part. It's if I leave dishes out and I leave a knife out, I'm convinced that that's going to be the murder weapon because I left it out.
So they didn't bring their own.
Yeah, even though, like, they can easily grab my knife from the block or anywhere, but if, like, I leave it on the counter, I'm, like, afraid it's gonna be the thing that kills me.
So you're like, no, we need to put this back just in case.
Just in case they're too lazy to grab it out of the knife block.
Like, so what if they were just coming in to steal, and they were like, hey, let's take his TV, and the other guy's like, wait a second. There's a knife on the counter.
Exactly! Exactly!
Why don't we just use that?
Yeah, like, to make sure he doesn't catch a steal. Like, anything. Like, what if he wakes up? Well, we might as well kill him. He left a knife out.
So every loose object in your house is basically like a Chekhov's gun. Like, yes. it needs to be used at a later time.
Like, to kill you. Like, anyone who walks in my house to, like, do something might be John Wick, and he might just, like, fucking grab a pencil and kill me. Like,
well, I mean, if you're gonna be killed by anybody, John Wick.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my weird fear. And then, like, Brenda recently bought brand new knives from Target, and I had a miniature heart attack, and I was like, they're so sharp.
She ever think she's gonna kill you?
Sometimes.
Yeah, I bet, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's usually the one that's closest to you.
You ever see that fucking meme, or that, like, video where the wife is, like, looming over her husband sleeping, and she slaps him, and he wakes up, and she's like, oh, sweet baby, are you okay? That's Brenda all the time.
Well, there was always, like, it reminds me of, you know, Dr. Cox and his female partner on Scrubs.
Yeah, I forget her name, but yes.
Yeah, she's a really funny comedian. But there was one night where she just stood over it and, like, and she just, like, stabbed him a little bit just to see what it would feel like. And in the whole episode, he's got, like, a bandage on his arm, and they're like, they're like, what happened? He's like, I don't know, I just, like, I feel like a cut on my arm. Yeah. And she admits later to just, like, stabbing him, like, just a tiny bit.
Anytime I wake up with, like, a scratch, it's probably just Brenda just, like,
and she's just like, just testing the waters, you know, putting a toe in the pool.
Like, how far can I go before he wakes up?
Until I feel guilty.
Right? Until I feel something.
Until I'm like, okay, that's enough.
that's about it.
I can only go an inch. I'll try for 2 next year, but
we'll push it a little further.
1 inch a year. We'll get there.
It's a That feels very fast.
Like, yeah, well, maybe half an inch in a year, yeah. I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, that's my weird fear.
I guess that's, I mean, that's not really weird. I mean, people, I think death is, like, the scariest thing ever. Like, I'm a major door locker. Like, yeah. I'm a big, when I'm in my house, I'm a big open door guy. Like, like inside the house, all the doors are
that
open.
That still kind of scares me, though. Like,
but as long as front door and back door are locked, I'm pretty comfy.
Yeah, well, luckily with you, you're on a level, so, like, having your patio door open is, like, you're still safe.
Yeah,
like, unless
yeah.
Spider-Man's breaking in.
But like, I'd be lying if I didn't think sometimes somebody would, like, climb up to the balcony and I still lock the back door.
It's still a risk, yeah. I mean, you never know how fucking determined crackheads are.
Yeah, I mean, they're not strong. They're just, like, real agile.
They're just real feisty.
A real never-say-die attitude.
Yeah, like, anyone on crack suddenly becomes, like, fucking, what's that, fucking Free Solo.
Yeah. Like, parkour. They have, like, this, they have this real devil-may-care attitude. It's
fucking
it's scary.
Yeah, you can't, you never underestimate anyone on drugs.
Yeah, no, never. I mean, there's, like, what's that story? It's like, there's people, like, stories of people on PCP that will, like, when they're arrested, they'll just, like, break the handcuffs.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so, like...
They literally become, like, Bruce Willis from Unbreakable.
Yeah.
Like, fucking, like, snapping metal and shit.
Like. Or like that scene in Superman when he just, like, snaps them, like... Yeah, he's like, beep. When he's in the interrogation room and he just like pops them off and they're like, oh my God, we can't. It's like,
why I just wasted my handcuffs.
Yeah, I know. Just take them off. Like, why break handcuffs? But it's not that they're strong. They just can't feel anything in that.
Yeah, they just feel nothing. It's a different kind of thing. Like, it's not Superman. Yeah. It's like, they feel no pain.
Right. They still wake up with broken fucking wrists.
Fucking wake up like an idiot. Fucking wake up like a T-Rex.
Right. Wow. What happened last night? Well, let me tell you, buddy.
Let me tell you.
You fought everybody. Cool.
Take a quick break and then we'll get into it?
Yeah. Let's take a quick pause and get into the first section.
All right, cool. I'm going to hit the button. Yeah, we're back. We were supposed to do the time machine, but I guess...
Yeah, last season we had this running gag, or not gag, just a running thing where we made a noise and started the time machine, but we forgot to do it, but then we just rationalized it by just saying on the previous segment that traditions are supposed to die anyway.
Exactly. So it kind of works.
might as well just fucking kill that whole thing.
Yeah. Because I don't think we did it on the last two either, so...
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
Well, no, because
maybe on episode 6, I'll just fucking make a noise. I don't know.
we're fucking artists. Like, you don't have to, like...
Don't be a box.
You don't understand the complexities of my mind, buddy. Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I'm Jackson Pollock up in this bitch. Yeah.
I'll fucking shit all over this notebook if I want to. I don't care. Right? I'm a fucking artist.
Fucking publish it. Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. So, we should probably say at some point who we're talking about.
Yeah, go for it, bud.
Okay, so today we're going to cover Sayid Rehola Mousavi Khomeini. That's just a lot of names. He was the former supreme leader of Iran. Also, for anyone in the Western side of the world, we probably just know him as Ayatollah Khomeini. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like his more like title. Ayatollah basically just means like leader.
One thing too, real quick, sorry.
Yeah.
I when I looked up the how to pronounce his last name, The last name Khomeini was really like Khokh, like with a.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, like out of respect of not doing that noise every time, I just called him Rahala the whole time.
Oh, okay. Well, wouldn't that be like? Wouldn't there be that noise in there, like Rahala?
Well, it's a little less. It's less okay. Though. It's more like Rahala Khomeini.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, like we're white Westerners. Like we're gonna fuck it up anyway. So, I'm not gonna. I mean, yes. That is very respectful of you. Maybe I'll try to say Rahala as well. I wrote Khomeini in all my notes, so
you know what, dude, just fucking go with it, buddy. Yeah. As long as we admit it's gonna maybe sound disrespectful,
yeah.
that's taking the responsibility away from you.
I acknowledge it, just don't hate me. So an Ayatollah is basically the title for leader among the Shiite. And the Shiites, I just had to break that down a little bit because, like, I was like, what is an Ayatollah? The Shiite are basically the people who specifically follow the Shia branch of Islam. So it's a specific branch of Islam and their specific leader. There's a lot of Ayatollahs, but, like he's just one of them. But then later he was, like, the supreme, like, the grand Ayatollah, like, supreme leader.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in 1902 and died the year I was born in 1989.
Get out, really?
Yeah.
There can be only one, huh?
There can be only one. I'm the new Ayatollah.
World wasn't big enough for the two of you, huh?
I think I was actually born before he died, though. So,
oh.
I guess it's kind of the same thing. I was born, and I was like, the world was just imploding. They're like, get the fuck out.
Well, you were the usher that guided him over the River Styx.
Yeah, I was like, this way, sir. Yeah. He didn't become leader until 1979, though, and then he was leader until his death in 89. So he only had, like, a 10-year reign. I mean, that's more than two terms for a president, which isn't bad.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, too. 10 years, that's, like, reasonable. It's only two more years than a president. It's not bad.
Two more years than a back-to-back president. Not long, like, not as long as, like, a king or anything, but...
Yeah.
I mean, up there as a modern leader, unless you're Putin. But
it's just like the more we get into this, though, it's the density of those fucking 10 years.
Yeah, it's a fake fucking hoagie. Like, it's a fake 10 years. Like,
it's a fucking Coke can chode of a 10 years.
This guy's fucking walking around with a pendulum for 10 fucking years. Like,
the big tall can of Bud Ice between his legs.
It's a good point. Like, yeah, we're like, oh, 10 years is not even that long. This guy did a lot of fuckery in like 10 years.
Yeah, this thing's thicker than grandma's casserole, buddy.
So,
my head.
I just did a little bit on his early life. A lot of it, it's just like, it's not that interesting. Kind of the opposite of sometimes when we cover some of these people where we're like, oh, no one wrote anything about their early life. Like, this guy has stuff. It's just normal and like not fun. So okay. So something that I found very interesting about his early life, though, was his education, which I found kind of I just never really read it this way, so okay. I'm not going to pretend to understand it all. If Mark wants to dig deeper into it, he can. But basically, from what I gather, there's like three things that he's like types of education that he studied, and that was Sharia, which was Islamic law.
Right.
Fiqh, which was the philosophy of law based off of Islam. And Irfan, which was the wisdom or Islamic mysticism. And the thing I found really interesting about that is all of that education is through a religious filter.
Right.
So everything he's like law, philosophy, it's all through a lens of Islam, which I'm like, well, that's going to make you like really jaded and like subjective to like what actual law is.
Right.
I mean, it probably explains a lot why, you know, if this is how they're learning, why they hate Western ideals so much, because we don't educate that way, at least from like my perspective, but that could be because I'm on the other side. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing as going to like a Christian Science bookstore.
Exactly.
It's everything, science. Everything in there is explained by the scripture.
Yeah.
So every like all, like anything that makes up the world around us is explained in the scripture. Mm-hmm. So all the scientists are bent, all the sciences and like, you know, other educational topics are bent to that will.
Yes, 100%. You know, that's a really good point. Like there is elements of it happening here, like in that same right. sense. I can't say one way or another, like if it's more of a thing over there, maybe it's more common. Because I feel like the faith really runs a lot of things over there. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I've never been there. So,
I'm pretty sure it does, buddy.
Yeah. I'm trying not to like generalize.
I mean, there's no reason to put on airs. It's all about that over there, buddy.
True. Okay. Yeah. You have a fair point. But yeah, I just found that really interesting because it's like, he was a very educated man, but it's like, it's all through a filter. And I'm like, well, like, hold on, guy. Like, you can't, like, you know, like, even to the point where he had this weird beef with, like, international time zones. Because he's like, nah, we didn't come up with that. They came up with that. Fuck that. Yeah. And I was like, no, that's just the way that we spin. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, it's one of those things. It's, you know, like, looking at yourself in the mirror. It's like, we still swear in political leaders on a Bible. Like,
but that's actually a choice, though. They can choose another thing.
Well, they could choose whatever Bible, but it still has to be a thing.
I'm going to choose a dictionary.
Yeah, choose a dictionary. Merriam-Webster.
But I did find out he still was a really big fan of, because he was really into philosophy. He was a fan of, like, some of, like, the big names. Like, he was really into Aristotle and Plato. So he understood. I mean, yeah, they're not, like, really Western. They're from the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. But, like, they're generally accepted worldwide. And he was really, like, he literally called, like, Aristotle, like, the father of wisdom. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was like, he definitely was able to, like, you know, recognize other, like, ideals, I guess. And he was really into poetry. He wrote a shit ton of poems.
Really?
A lot. Like, okay, so there's, I don't know if you know this, but this was really striking to me because I thought it was so weird how some of the really big Middle Eastern leaders have these weird, like, hobbies, like, he's really into poetry. Saddam Hussein wrote, like, filthy sexual novels. Like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, fucking... Saddam wrote, like, dirty sex books. Like, it was, like, his thing. Like...
Who else wasn't there, like, a political pundit that did... Wasn't it, like, Ted Cruz or something that has, like, a line of, like, romance novels?
Probably.
It's like, somebody like that.
So weird.
It's...
Like, that's, like, their little thing they do in their study. Like,
I don't want to say Ted Cruz, but it's like, hey, yeah, I'm ruling this world and all, but I still like a little romance, you know? Right?
Like, it's like, yeah, like this guy, like, yeah, but he's like, oh yeah, I hate all this stuff, but like, have you guys ever read a haiku?
Yeah. Like, you just catch him in a bubble bath with a Danielle Steele novel. Right. It's like, oh, this is getting steamy.
It's so steamy. Apparently, like, he was so into it, like, I forget his name, I think it was like Najjar or Nadar. He's another like major poet from that area. I think he died in 2000, but he was quoted saying, he's like, there was literally a day where him and Khomeini like for 4 hours recited poetry together.
Wow.
Like, to the point where like Nadar would recite one line and then from like some poem, and Khomeini would already know the next line and just like recite it back. And it was like their thing. Yes. Like, it's like Romeo and Juliet at each other.
I was gonna say, did, like, after every line, did they take an article of clothing off? Jesus like, Christ.
Strip
poetry?
Yeah. Like, I was reading it, I was like, what the fuck? Like,
that's fucking hot, dude. Right? I'm into it.
This fucking guy just, like, sitting there, like, all angry and shit, just reciting it. But yeah, apparently he had like a ton of like books published after his death of just like fuck like 3 full volumes of poems that he wrote. Mm-hmm. Like, just fucking weird. It was super weird. I don't know.
It's weird too, because like when we get into my segment too, he seems like a man of very few words.
Exactly. So understanding a little bit of that, it kind of literally like falls right in step with how he's going to be as a politician. So his focus was 100% on applying his religion to practical, social, and all political issues. That is something definitely done on this side of the globe as well.
For sure.
Everyone freaking makes their political choices based off what their religion tells them, which is mm-hmm. not smart.
Basically a human rights violation, but that's okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, make your own moral compass on your own.
Yeah. It's diet fascism.
Diet fascism, yes. Fascism light. Where was I? What is it? Okay, so as the Iranian government, like, started to kind of, like, more connect with the rest of the world, especially the West, like, he was very much against it and resisted more and more. At this point, like, he was already up in, like, the political, like, you know, hierarchy, and he was just like speaking out. He had a platform. And in 1963, he was arrested for speaking out against the current leader, what do they call it? What's his name? The Shah, right?
Yeah, Shah. I think his Shah. Name was
Pahlavi. Riza Pahlavi.
Riyadh. There you go. Perfect.
So he was speaking out against the Shah, because at this point it's still like a monarchy kind of thing. So he's arrested, and this caused like a 3-day riot. In the city, like, because he was being transferred to Tehran, and it just caused this gigantic riot that lasted 3 days, which killed over 400 people.
Oh boy.
Yeah, just because like he was so popular, like people were pissed he was arrested.
Yeah,
like, this guy was like weirdly popular.
No, he was fucking Elvis, dude. He was huge.
I can't believe you just said, because I literally referred to him as Elvis later on.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. Oh, sorry to mow your grass. No,
that's just super weird that you okay. Made the same thing. Yeah, like,
it's crazy
like,
how fucking popular he is.
Political Elvis, and it's nuts. Mm-hmm. So 400 people die in this riot in his favor. Pretty much after that, he's exiled for like 14 years. I didn't cover his exile because I was like, boring. He's just kicked out, moves around a little bit. Actually, and for all of his bullshit talk, he actually like kind of makes a lot of connections with the U.S. to get back in. And like the Carter era kind of like helps him get back in because he assures them like, hey, you can still buy our oil. And it's like, wait, don't you hate us? Like, which I'm like, I always hate the fucking hypocrisy there.
Like, there's a lot of connections that I'm going to draw together later that you're going to be like, oh, fuck, dude. Like, okay. How involved we were in this whole thing
I already, fucking am not surprised. Like,
okay, cool.
Let's see, where was I? So in 1979. Yes, he comes, like, so in 1979, the current Shah, Riza Pahlavi, is pretty old, having some medical issues. He gets taken out of the country for medical purposes. I don't know why he had to, like, go out of the country, but he does. And he never comes back. He just, like, the way I read it is just, they don't know where he went. Like, he's just gone.
Okay.
Died, murdered, I don't know. Khomeini had already had other people kind of, like, assassinated. So, it's kind of just assumed. And then we kind of, like, give him safe harbor to get back into Iran. And he comes in on, like, a French airline. 2 weeks after the Shah's disappearance, and basically just comes home to like literally a crowd of like 5 million people. Like,
oh my gosh,
crazy!
Yes.
It's like the fucking Beatles landed.
It's the biggest fucking crowd. Okay, so it was. I did. It's basically the country of New Zealand showing up to your party.
Yeah,
it's the entire country of New Zealand showing up to your party.
One airport.
One airport.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts. So obviously he was missed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, good for him. So pretty much his return, he pretty much just goes in, kind of like takes control of the crumbling regime, and kind of overnight, like pretty much just puts an end to what was a 2,500-year Persian dynasty.
Right.
Which is crazy to think about for me, because when I hear Persian, I think 300.
Yeah.
Like battling the Greeks and shit. Like fucking, this is Sparta. Yeah. And to know that they had a fucking dynasty still going on into the modern era is really crazy.
Well, they always used to say, like, the only thing Persian anymore are cats and rugs. But
yes.
It was still going into, like, the late 70s. Like, literally at the end, like, the death rattle of the 70s.
It was
still going.
Like, literally, like, right when, like, fucking glam metal was about to kick off was when the Persian Empire really ended. Like,
once again, there can be only one. You can't have Persia law and glam metal. Crew. Like,
In order to have Nikki Sixx, we had to get rid of the Persian dynasty.
Okay. Let's, because we just need to get this butt rock in here somewhere. let's stop this.
Hell bent on leather. So he ends like the last giant Persian dynasty and basically just comes in and declares himself Supreme Leader Snoke overnight.
Right.
And is just, and then like just takes control.
That's so amazing.
That's pretty much where I just
I'm still stuck on this butt rock thing. I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you missed like, the Star Wars joke. I'm mad.
I know. No, I got Supreme Leader Snoke. I heard it. But it's just fun. Like, I just wanted to see, like, and he was like, I just picture it like, okay, and here's Ambassador D. Snyder from Twisted Sister. Like, here's a parade into town. It's like, all right, you guys
Gene,
get out of here.
Gene Simmons walks in and just kicks him out with his tongue and just like, blah.
It's just this big fucking like Woodstock type show of like a transfer of power. It just makes me laugh so hard.
Just imagine Woodstock with all like the love and like, you know, Janis Joplin and all that hippie movement. But it's all leather and glitter.
It's all leather and cocaine, buddy.
As far as the eye can see.
As far as the eye can see. All righty.
Oh, God. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and then I think we'll finally figure out why this guy is an asshole, even though the entire fucking country loves him.
Oh, buddy, I am going to tell you some stuff.
Okay. All right, we'll be right back.
All right.
Hey, guys, this is Cody and CJ from Justice Time Machine. Just doing another shout-out for our buddy Eli, who did our logo for the podcast. If you guys like what you saw with our logo and are looking for any kind of graphic design or logo work, he's really a reliable source to go to. It's ELIS_trashcan on Instagram. Really cool guy, really quick with his work and very talented. And, you know, he'll work within your budget. He's very understanding and reasonable. So yeah, reach out to him if you guys need any work done. It's definitely worth it, and have a good one.
We go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
All right, aboard, man. The pain.
Lay into it.
All aboard the pain train. The choo pain. Choo.
Snap into a slow jam.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah. All
right. So basically, you ended at his return from exile back into Iran. Yes. And like we said, it was huge. It was about 5 million people that showed up to the airport to see him. There was 120 journalists that were invited. Only three of the journalists were women, because there's this whole thing, like, you know, women can't, like, talk to married men. He hated women. And, like, under Sharia law, women can't talk to married men. It's really common in, like, Hasidic Jewish faith, too. I've had a lot of friends back in New York that were female that tried to rent apartments, but a lot of the property owners were Hasidic Jewish, of Hasidic Jewish faith, and they couldn't. They'd have to bring a male friend with them to talk to them, because they weren't, like, allowed to talk to them to rent the apartment.
What the fuck? That is so dumb.
Yeah, I've had, like hundreds of friends, female friends in New York that have had this problem. Like, they can't even fucking rent an apartment.
That is, oh God, it's all, I don't mean to be like insensitive, but that is the fucking dumbest shit I've ever heard. Like,
it's fucking stupid. It's
that's like imposing your faith on like a random person. It's like, they're like, the lady's like, I'm not Jewish. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like,
it's outdated. It's sexist.
It's fucking backwards, dude.
Patriarchal. It's
so stupid.
It's all just bullshit.
Sorry to anyone out there who fucking follows that, but like, that is just like, it doesn't. That specific type of thing doesn't belong in a modern era.
Yes. So Peter Jennings, the famous journalist for ABC, was among the 120 journalists that was invited to his return.
Okay.
Peter Jennings asked Ruhollah how he felt about returning to Iran, and he responded with the Iranian word hichi, and hichi means nothing.
Oh, I read that. I was like, ooh, that's fucking cool.
And it was like almost, yeah, it was kind of like a action movie thing to say, where how do you, you know, like, this is such a big moment, how do you feel? And he just basically said, I feel nothing.
Yeah.
So he got right to work.
I kind of read that it was a little foreboding, though, because it basically was like, he actually felt nothing because he feels nothing.
Yeah. And like you said, yeah, he feels nothing. And everybody was like so happy, because they said he was going to bring nationalism back to Iran. And but it was far from fucking nationalism, man. It was the evocation of human rights.
Yeah.
So he got right to work, saying he was gonna kick the teeth in of the interim government that was in charge at that point. He literally said, "Kick in the teeth of the interim government."
Ruhollah Rick.
And then he appointed Mahdi Bazargan as prime minister, and just said, for the time being, just obey the Prime Minister because his orders are coming from me anyway. Okay. Now, he said, if you disobey the new Prime Minister, the new Prime Minister, Minister. That's my favorite Transformer, Minister.
The Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister. He changes from a priest into this like cool airplane. So he said, if you disobey him, it'll be a revolt against God. So basically,
high stakes.
How this works, Ruhola is very much like the Pope in this situation because he speaks for Muhammad or God.
Of course he does.
And he appoints leaders to obey him, which are basically God's witches. So this is almost like the crux of being an Ayatollah.
Yes, an Ayatollah
speaks for God because he's next in line from Muhammad.
Of course.
Got it?
Yeah.
So it's a hierarchy.
That's literally how I speak to everyone I know.
Right. Yeah. It goes God, me, then everybody else.
So like whatever I say, just know it's coming from a good place.
It's coming from the best place. You'll see it someday, I promise.
You'll get it. I'm right there on the big guy's desk.
So he flipped, right during his work, he basically just flipped the Islamic constitution, and he did it according to Islamic revolutionary ideals. So he established the Islamic Revolutionary Courts, a new Islamic revolutionary military and police, and he put all the top Iranian theologists and religious academics in charge of the other form of governmental factions. So whoever understands the Quran and Islam the best and in its truest form is now in charge.
Cool. So, I mean, yeah, there's not going to be any mishaps with that.
it's literally fucking waterproof plan.
Everyone's gonna make decisions based off of past mistakes and science, and everything's just gonna go great.
So we're gonna take this one book, and I know it's the most disputed piece of art and culture we have, but let's just follow that, and it's gonna be tighter than a duck's ass, buddy. Don't worry about it. I know nobody.
The balloon knot? Nothing gets through that shit. That's gonna be as tight as that.
I know nobody agrees on the translation. Blah 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 blah.
But let me tell you, God told me how to translate it. So
right, yeah. All right, Book of Mormon.
Dum 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 dum.
All right. So right. So whoever understands the best is going to be in charge. This gave a lot of people basically just giant face boners, and they were super stoked that like this like religious zealot, this like nationalist, was going to be in charge.
Yeah.
And everybody was basically having a good time for 1 year.
Okay.
While he was like reverting the constitution back to Muslim and Islamic ideals.
Nothing hit yet, so the transition was fine.
Yeah. So. Except for dissenting media and oppositional leaders
like
the National Democratic Front and the Muslim People's Republican Party, they were attacked and banned and exiled. Except for them, everything was going swimmingly.
Yeah. I mean, that's just one group of people.
Yeah. It's just pebbles in an hourglass at this point.
Exactly.
So anywho, shit gets real heavy starting October 22nd, 1979.
Okay.
So the original Shah
that we're all... a year in. That's really soon.
Well, it was February to October, so it was almost a full year.
We didn't even make it to Halloween.
Yeah. Which I'm pretty sure they're not big fans of either.
Probably that's like pagan heathenism. Just saying.
So it kicked off when, I forgot his name already, the original Shah that was in place. What was his name?
Reza Pahlavi, I think.
Reza Pahlavi?
Yeah.
So Reza Pahlavi got
sick. Did you
call
him Reba?
Yeah, Reba McEntire got sick.
Yes.
Reza Pahlavi got sick, and since he was in exile at this point, he needed cancer treatment from somewhere.
Mm.
And the U.S. took him in because he couldn't get it in Iran.
Oh, so that's where he went.
So he went to the U.S. for cancer treatment.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Ruhola wanted the Shah back. Reza Pahlavi. I have his name finally right here. So he wanted the Shah back so he could publicly execute him.
whoa, okay.
In front of everybody. And the U.S. was like, nah, fucking nah, dude. Like, we're not just going to, like, hand this.
I'm imagining this fucking poet lover writing a fucking eloquent letter to Carter and was like, please give me him back so I could fucking kill him.
Right. I'm sure it was in haiku form, like 575.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not a poet.
It's probably beautiful.
Yeah.
But we're like, no, fucking no, dude. He's dying from cancer. We're not just going to give him over. We're going to treat him.
You just fucking took his country. Like, leave him alone.
So this is where it kicks off, right? So in response, not Ruhollah himself, but a group of college students called the Muslim Student Followers of the Imam's Line. So basically the very stalwart, radical, dedicated followers of Ruhollah.
Okay.
This group forcibly took over the American embassy in Tehran and held 52 American embassy staff members hostage for 444 days.
That's over a year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Almost a year and a half.
Damn, you can't. That's not good. You can't do that.
Yeah, so this is actually known. It's a very popular point in time. It's known as the Iran hostage crisis.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
didn't Ben Affleck do a movie about that?
Oh, I hope not.
I think he did. I think he got an Oscar for it.
Really?
Yeah, it was, like, really good.
Okay.
We'll come back.
Good for him. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't have a really big problem with Ben Affleck. I think he's a cool dude.
I love Batfleck. So.
Batfleck. Okay, so... Most of the public was fucking stoked on this, hostage situation.
Yeah, except the people in the building.
Everyone except for the 52 American citizens.
Yeah.
So they were pretty stoked on it. And Ruhollah held, like, really dumbed down campaigns to inspire the public to support the hostage situation. So he publicly had a stance, and his stance was this kind of snipped line: America can't do a damn thing to us.
Big words, buddy.
So this, it's such an ironic line because it sounds like an American would say that.
Maybe he's kind of channeling it. Like,
in a reverse situation, like, it almost sounds like something like Harrison Ford said at the end of Air Force One or something like that. like Iran can't do a damn thing to us. Like, it sounds like if it was reversed, it's like an American thing to say. It's weird.
It's probably like he watched a bunch of American commercials.
Yeah.
And, like, figured out how we get people to buy shit. He's like, you want this damn Cheese Whiz. And he was like, okay.
he bought, like, an... Like it's like a Iranian to American translator. Like, how do we like to be spoken to?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, they like the word damn a lot. Oh, they can't do a damn thing. Damn, damn, do us.
He watched, like, nothing but fucking John Wayne and fucking... 007 movies for like fucking a week.
He's like, this is how you get through to those people. Okay. So finally, in 1981, so 2 years later, wait, is that 2 years?
Yeah, from
79. Yeah, 2 years later, all the hostages were released safely. They went to an airport in New York, JFK probably, under President Jimmy Carter and Vice President George Bush Sr. But still, most of the time, the radical Islam supported this hostage situation, saying that America was, in quotations, the great Satan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and they referred to Russia as the lesser Satan.
Yeah. And it's so weird. At this point, I almost got, like, nostalgic for, like, the halcyon days of, like, Republican leaders that actually had, like, a fucking backbone and a moral compass. Like, and now they're all just, like, fucking pussy puppet pieces of shit.
Yeah.
I would have been a fan of Jimmy Carter. I'm still a fan of Jimmy Carter. He builds houses for humanity.
He's still a lovely guy.
I would have been a fan of George Bush Sr. Like, I'm not a fan, but I would have been, like, understanding of it.
Yeah, like, I miss the days when our upper politicians they acted like America was the greatest. Like, when they actually did shit because we were.
Like, Republicans and Democrats used to just dispute over economical issues, and now there's all these human rights issues and all these, like, nuanced issues that...
Yeah, now we can't even send a fucking check without fucking having a Congress meeting about it.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Can't agree on anything.
But then you've got, like, you know, people like FDR who can't even fucking move his legs, and he's like, fuck these fuckers up. Like,
and you have the fucking skeleton... which piece of fucking shit Mitch McConnell, like, blocking really important deals on the Senate floor just because he can and he wants
to. I'd say McConnell looks more like a floppy turkey. Pelosi looks like a skeleton.
Yeah.
Pelosi's fucking Skeletor. Like,
fucking Douglas Adams, man. Nobody capable of becoming a politician should be allowed to do it.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. You can sell your soul for that shit.
Yeah.
But okay. I get what you're saying, though. Like, there definitely was an age where, like, the leaders, like, said they were going to do shit and did shit. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And things got done. I mean, I'm not just talking about, like, us. Like, that, like, worldwide, like, that shit happened. Like, we haven't had a fucking Churchill in for fucking ever. Like,
that's true. Yeah. Well, like, you know. Greater days. How fine are you drinking
whiskey nonstop all day and fucking get shit done? Like,
just a little bit. Just a little bit of the bottom of his soda water.
Yeah, well, that was just when he drank highballs, when he drank everything else.
Like, no, he did, like, fucking polish off bottles of champagne at lunch, that's right.
Oh, yeah, he was, like, two champagnes deep in his fucking sandwich. Like,
a champagne sandwich?
Yes. Like,
all right,
bring us back, bring us
back. All right, I'm not gonna fucking Taylor Swift real quick and shake this shit off. All right, so the Iran-Iraq War.
Okay.
September 1980. So... ding, 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 in the Red Quarter, supporting Islamic revolution across all Muslim states, the man from Iran, Ruhollah Khomeini.
The man from Iran.
And in the Blue Quarter, Iraq's Nationalist Party leader and part-time oil tycoon, Saddam the Driller Hussein.
Oh, shit, I didn't know he was coming up.
Yeah. Let's get ready to humble.
Oh, you should have said, let's get ready to hummus.
Let's get ready. I thought humble would be fun.
That's funny, though. I totally, right. Like, didn't even put it together. I'm like, oh, 80s? Yeah, Saddam. Like,
yeah, here we go, buddy. So
he's trading sex books with his fucking poetry. Like,
that was their currency, is erotic fiction.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's Saddam versus Khomeini. So...
Sorry. It just sounded like you called him, like, Saddam and Punani.
Saddam and maybe.
Sorry.
Let me just stop real quick and just apologize for everything before this and everything coming after this.
We got Saddam and Punani.
We're just going to take a brief apology break right here. Just an apology from our sponsors. All right. So Saddam saw Ruhollah coming to revolutionize Iraq under his new constitution. Mm-hmm. But Iran's military was still really weak in its transition of power. So Iraq actually attacked first.
Oh, like a preemptive strike.
Yeah. So Saddam saw Ruhollah coming, and he saw that there was a win-win situation there for him.
Okay.
The win-win situation was that Iran's military was insanely weak and that there's a shit ton of oil in Iran too.
Yeah.
So it's a very rich oil country.
So, okay, so strike first and fucking get it.
Yeah, so their military is fractioned. They have oil. Saddam was like, I'm getting in there. I'm going to get it. It's going to be the easiest fucking war ever fought. I got this. But the initial attack was thwarted by a strong Iranian force. And then Saddam started using poison gas. And then he pushed the war effort forward back into Iran. But then Iran pushed right the fuck back. And by 1982, all the areas that Iraq gained, Iran won back.
Oh, okay, so really not making any progress.
So the first attack was stopped in its tracks. Then Saddam started using poison gas. Mm-hmm. So he moved forward into Iran.
Pulled a little Fritz Haber there.
Pulled a little Fritzy. But then Iran came back and pushed them all the way back to the border. Okay. So Iran was basically just right where it started.
Back to ground zero.
Back to ground zero, exactly. So how did a weak military like Iran's and a new regime do so fucking well against Saddam Hussein? I'll fucking tell you right now, buddy.
Okay.
In order to keep the situation just between Iran and Iraq, because basically they were really getting close to Central Asia and the Soviets were starting to pick up on it, which is like, hey, you guys are getting like a little too close here and we're also fucking crazy. So like, what are we going to do here?
The last thing you want to do is like, hint that Russia might be invited to the party.
You can invite them to the regular party, but never invite them to the after party.
Exactly. Like, the second Russia gets a sniff of an after party, they're like, oh, duh.
It's like, oh, fuck. There's going to be a fight at 5 a.m. in the hotel foyer for sure.
Someone's getting stabbed.
So, the U.S., knowing that Iran was more rich in oil, supported Iran in the conflict.
Of course we did.
So the U.S. illegally smuggled weapons and ammunition into Iran to support, like I said, the more oil-rich state, and which is known as now the Iran-Contra affair, because it was illegal what they were doing at the time. It was illegal what we were doing at the time.
Yeah, yeah, of course it was.
On top of this, one of the other reasons Iran won is Ruhollah's tactics were absolutely fucking savage.
The way he
used his people to win that conflict is downright, it's hard to put into words how.
Okay, so are you about to tell me that, like, his tactics were worse than Saddam using poisonous gas?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not gonna split hairs, but it's pretty fucking bad, and let me tell you about it.
I mean, you sounded less willing to talk about that than poisonous gas.
But we've discussed this before, and this is like a new method of
true.
Military warfare, so I want to get into it.
Okay.
So a lot of the followers of Ruhollah were really faithful followers, and they were indoctrinated as children. So and he used children and adults as human waves against Iraqi forces.
Human waves?
So they would form large masses of groups, children and adults alike, and walked into attacking Iraqi forces to suppress their fire.
What is this, 1776? Like,
so they would just walk into them, swarm them like a beehive swarming a wasp, or
I'm just picturing like World War Z, like when the fucking wave of zombies like fucking round a corner, and you only have so many bullets in one magazine. Like,
it's exactly like that.
So he's using him as fodder.
Exactly.
Damn.
So
how many people do you have to use to fucking break enemy lines?
Like, I will absolutely tell you in just a short little bit.
Oh fuck. Okay. I was hoping you didn't have an answer.
I got it, buddy. I was hoping for speculation. So he used the large masses of people. They were all promised that they would immediately go to paradise right after sacrificing themselves. Mm. Of course. So it is religious indoctrination that they were used. They were tricked into sacrificing themselves. By 1984, the Iran population was decreased by 2 million.
Holy shit.
Half were killed in the war effort, including martyrdom and executions, and the other half fled the country.
Dang.
So what, approximately 1 million people died in the war effort against Iraq from Iraq.
And then another million just left.
And another million were just like, this is fucking scary. We're out
of here. That's insane.
The war also costed $300 billion.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money. So in 1988, 4 years after like the last conflict, Ruhollah finally agreed to a truce, basically. They called it a truce. It's not a treaty. It's a truce. I don't know. It just sounds really childish saying a truce, but that's fine.
Yeah.
But the truce was arbitrated by the United Nations with Iraq, and he really didn't want to. He had no remorse.
Who, Khomeini or Saddam?
Khomeini. Like, Saddam. Okay. Saddam actually asked for a truce 2 years earlier, 1982, that Khomeini refused.
Okay.
And Ruhollah Khomeini just kept pushing. So it wasn't even like a thought to him. And I just want to let me get this over with, and then we'll be done with this little segment here.
That's fine.
So this is the scary part to me, that it wasn't a thought. It was a religious instinct. It was second nature. It was just basically eat, fuck, piss, shit, and kill. And he wrote the following article after the truce. And it goes like this. We do not repent, nor are we sorry for even a single moment for our performance during the war. Have we forgotten that we fight to fulfill our religious duty, and then that result is a marginal issue? So he's basically saying that whatever happens is during the war effort pales in comparison to the ultimate goal of being a faith-based nation. Mm. So he's saying
it's all just part of the deal.
It's all just a part of it. So it was just second nature for him. It was just, this is what the book says we do, and this is what we do. So
yeah, but are you going to go down there and be part of that fucking wave?
No, he's a fucking pussy. No. So basically, just to bring my segment full circle, he ultimately meant it when he said he literally felt nothing.
There you go. Damn, dude, that's just like, well, I can't even begin. Like, it would be a whole nother fucking episode's worth of time for me to, like, go through why I think that mentality is just fucking wrong, backwards, and ancient. But the main thing I'm hung up on is, one, just the fucking decision you would make to just be like, you know what, you guys can't really, like, we can't advance, so just everyone line up and just walk. Like, until they run out of bullets, like, which is just fucking nuts.
It reminded me of the Armenian death marches. It's like you're literally marching to your death, but
you're not marching. Because the execution's behind you.
Exactly.
It's in front of you.
Right dead in front of you, staring in the eye with a firing line, and you're just walking straight into it with your fucking son and daughter right next to you.
Yeah, like, oh shit, wait, was he using civilians?
Well, anybody that was dumb enough to sign up. It wasn't just a military effort. Oh, it was everybody. Geez. Anybody that was dumb enough to sign up.
Didn't even consider that.
No, because it's not a military effort. It's a religious effort. So it's anybody that cares about the cause is invited.
Anyone with the faith.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, I just, like, I feel like I had other things I wanted to say, but I just can't get over that. Like, the fact that you will not relent just off of your fucking principle, like, is just like, then you shouldn't be in charge. Like, but that's the problem, is like, everyone else, like, believed in you for a fucking split second, and that's why you're here.
Well, they trusted him.
They trusted him.
Because I'm not saying, like, because I mean, like I said, it's the most disputed, translated in 100 million different ways book of literature we have, and it's like the word of God. Like, yeah. So who's really in charge of getting it right? Like,
yeah, but you know what?
And the people,
anyone who fucking follows that as fucking fact shouldn't be leading a country.
Or just use, I mean, there's lots of, like, good parts. Just use the good parts.
That's what I'm saying. They always use the worst parts. Like,
yeah. Use the nice parts. Don't kill somebody. Great. Don't do that. Yeah.
Fucking people over here that do it with the Bible. It's like, they always fucking, like, stick to the worst shit. Yeah. Like,
stop. If you're going to cherry pick the fun parts. Don't cherry pick the shitty parts.
That shit's boring, I guess.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Yeah. Like, God. Okay. I mean, that's just unreal. Like, it's just, and it doesn't surprise me at all that, like, we fucking, like, smuggled in weapons for them, because we would do the same thing in the Middle East every fucking time there's a fucking dispute. It's the same reason we ended up with ISIS, because we fucking created them.
Yeah, we funded them, dude. We gave them the guns
when they were on the side for us.
Yeah,
and now, you know, they're not, because, like, you can't fund a zealot and then expect them not to fucking turn on you.
Yeah, but they still have all the weapons you gave them originally. Like,
I thought they were gonna fucking return them.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? That fight's over. Can we give our guns back? Like, no, of course not. Nobody's ever returned a gun ever. Oh, I don't think.
Stupid. Literally, ever, unless it was broken.
Yeah, my gun broke. Oh, damn, dang.
Then they want a refund. Like, at the Walmart.
I need a refund on this gun and extra bullets, please.
And extra bullets, yeah. For the inconvenience.
Good to go down the piggy wig and get myself an AK-47.
Ah, jeez, man. Yeah, that fucking sucks. Right. So, literally, he single-handedly decreased his fucking country's population by 2 million.
Not only did he decrease the population by 2 million, he also – there was a lot of other things. I need a break right now.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You have a little bit more, so we're gonna
we'll take a little break, and then I'm gonna encroach on your part a little bit.
That's fine.
Because all the shit he did was just a lot, but I just wanted to tell the preamble story.
Yeah.
And then there's just a few more things, and then we'll finish it off.
Yeah, fine. I totally forgot about that, so I'm glad you brought that up. All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Justice Time Machine. We appreciate it very much so. I want to take this opportunity to also appreciate another person. I hope that line of logic followed. His name is Johnny Niddle, and he is the person responsible for doing all of our music. He did our theme song, he does all the transitions, and we couldn't be happier with his work. We think it's like absolutely wonderful. It's one of the greatest things that's happened to our podcast since it started. It's actually sounding much more professional and just all around better. So you should absolutely give me your business. Go to johnnyrk.com. That's Johnny RK, JohnnyRK.com. Or you can find him on all social media at Johnny RK. Go to Johnny Niddle, give him your money. He deserves every penny. Thank you, Johnny, and we'll see you next time.
And we're back.
Oh, we're still back.
We're still back.
Welcome back to Talking Teens with Cody and CJ.
What did you say, Talking Teens?
Talking Teens. So the other day, my teacher was tits. Talking Teens. So my teacher was all like, what? And I was like, yeah, well, come here sometimes. I do. I don't know. But I'm such an ignorant teacher. Oh, my God.
All right. So for usual on this part, well, actually, we haven't even done it this season yet. Usually, part three is like the aftermath, but the last two people we didn't really have any. We do have one this time, but CJ is actually breaking the wall and continuing the bullshit.
Yeah, another fuck tradition right here. We have three traditions that we've completely fucked in the bee,
ruined all together
on one episode. That's our that's our record. Three traditions bursted.
I'm proud.
Yeah, me too. Let's make a point to just keep fucking him up.
Okay.
All right. So, at the end of his reign, he declared two fatwas. Now, a fatwa is basically it's just a decree. It's a religious ruling coming from a highest ruler. Fatwa doesn't always mean you have to kill someone. It's just a religious ruling. So it's a religious ruling against. So he had
We don't like this guy.
So, well, or it could be against something that's non-material. So it could be he had another fatwa against chemical weapon use. So because Saddam used it in the war, he was like, all right, new rule, no more chemical weapons. Mm. And the second fatwa was against the author Salman Rushdie.
Oh,
and he was like, okay, new rule, no more Salman Rushdie.
And a third one, on Wednesdays we wear pink.
On Wednesdays we wear pink. Well, Talking Teens, we wear pink on Wednesdays. So I really just don't have the energy to get into Salman Rushdie.
That's fine.
He was a prolific writer, he was an author, and he wrote something that Ruhollah really disagreed with. So Mark, take it away, big guy.
Yeah, you can cover him.
This feels real Mark to me right here.
I think he was just kind of like a science fiction writer or something. Like, he just wrote fun stuff.
Like an Isaac Asimov kind of guy. Yeah,
the little snippet I saw, like, he wrote, like, fiction types. Most of it was fiction, and it was, like, religious-based, mm-hmm. but, like, with a twist. Like, he wasn't, like, I don't know, wasn't, like, a politician or anything making a stand, but he made something against him.
It could have come up. I mean, yeah. I bet it did. I mean,
I'm assuming it did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it did, if you wanted to put a fatwa against him. But I just wanted that to be out there. A fatwa doesn't mean kill this person. It just means a religious ruling against
something. Some people just take it that way.
Yeah. So living under Ruhollah was almost 10 years of straight up the worst human rights violations, and it was all veiled under religious tinted glasses. Mm. So in order to keep this brief and for the sake of brevity, let's just go ahead and fuck it. Religious?
Yeah, so you know, like you say, like, you know, through, like, love is like rose tinted glasses. What color is religious tinted glasses?
Stained glass.
Oh, just like a bunch of shit?
it's stained glass. It's like looking through a stained glass window.
Oh, so there's like divisions and breaks and fucking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
It's okay. Just a fucking Picasso picture.
Yeah, like a kaleidoscope. It's a kaleidoscope. So let's just let's fucking list them, Cody. Let's list.
All right, let's do his best hits.
Listen with your buds, greatest hits. Okay, so he had a strict dress code. He didn't allow alcohol. He didn't allow. Ew. I know, what a fucking buzzkill, literally. No Western movies. Men and women weren't allowed to like sunbathe together. He led the opposition.
Okay with that. No one should be sunbathing.
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe he was just scared of skin cancer, I guess, maybe. He led the opposition against women voting.
Aw.
And this is where the jokes are going to end right here.
Oh, cool.
He legalized rape.
What?
Yeah. He said women must surrender to a man for his pleasure. He lowered the age of consent to 7 years old.
What the fuck? You literally, like, oh my God. Like, the fucking definition of, like, making a hard left. Like, you fucking did, like, 3 U-turns in a row and then turned left.
That's why I said the joke stopped here.
I didn't think you were going to go straight to fucking child rape.
Yeah. He lowered it to 13, thought it wasn't low enough, and then lowered it again to 7.
What? Who the fuck says 13 is not low enough?
This fucking piece of fucking shit, dude. Sorry, I'm like... Ugh. I'm at that point where I'm like so mad I could put sentences together.
13's great and all, like let's lower it by like 6.
Yeah. What? All right. He encouraged polygamy as long as it was paternal polygamy. So as long as it was a man with a harem, it was legal.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He executed 16 homosexuals. He executed 100 drug addicts. He executed every prostitute he came across.
Jesus.
He increased poverty by 45% during his 10 years.
Holy fuck.
He threatened to hang every Jew.
Okay. Like, sorry, I didn't mean to yawn. I was just like, literally, like, my brain was like overloading. I was like, what the fuck? Like,
I don't think that was like a yawn. I think that was like a defense mechanism for you almost going into a coma.
Literally, it was like it was the reverse. My brain was trying to wake me back up because I was like, okay, so he's like Middle Eastern Hitler.
Yeah.
And he just fucking hates sex, apparently. He's like killing every prostitute. Yeah. But it's like okay with fucking child porn.
So lastly, and I can't express how much this is the last part because I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing me talk already. So 30,000 Iranian political prisoners were executed during a 5-month period. This is known as the 1988 executions. It's one of the last things that Rouhollah did while he was in power. People, 6 at a time, using forklifts to lift them, were hung and lifted onto cranes to hang until they were dead.
What? Wait.
30,000 people within the span of 5 months, 6 at a time, were raised up with forklifts and then hung on a crane to die.
I'm sorry. That just seems so inefficient.
I think they thought it was the most efficient.
Yeah.
Because they had to kill 30,000 people in 5 months.
Yeah, but like, the forklift to crane thing. So, what, like, because you had 6 people stand on a pallet and then lift them up, and then,
well, no.
Then a crane fucking, like, what the fuck?
So, they would be backed into it. They would be on pallets, and people would be on pallets in a truck. They would take the pallet with a forklift out of the truck with people on it, raise the forklift up, and then hang them 6 at a time from a crane.
You don't even need the forklift thing. Like, that's the thing I'm talking about, like, that's inefficient. Like, if you want to use a forklift, then just take a forklift and then put fucking 6 people in two rows of 3 and fucking just stab them with a forklift.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to, like, fucking make his thing more efficient, but I'm like, he can't even fucking, he's stupid. Like, he can't even fucking do that right. But he's like, I gotta kill 30,000 people in fucking 5 months, you piece of shit. Like,
God, I hate this guy with fucking every inch of my body.
Because now I'm instantly regretting to agreeing for you to do this. Because now I have to talk about his fucking death, which is like fucking Elvis died.
Yeah.
And it's going to fucking feel real shitty.
Well, maybe it'll paint a larger picture of the reality of the situation. And we'll
it's going to make him look like a fucking hero.
Let's just get over it.
Like, but still, though, like, goddamn, dude. Like, what a piece of shit.
Yeah, the worst. The absolute worst. Like, one of the worst that we've come across.
Like,
it was one of the hardest...
And I hate for that whole
fucking, sections of
the whole bit I just did about like the inefficiency of it, because it just like I meant it more like he's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like he's just like trying to fucking make a point and like isn't even good at it. It sucks that like the thing that he's not good at is killing people.
It is very much like that. It's acting like you know what you're doing all the time is really more often than not going to end in you looking like a complete stupid piece of shit.
Yeah, it's fucking dumb.
That's why I never agreed with the fake it till you make it thing. It's like, no, you're going to end up looking like a fucking asshole a lot.
I can't get around like the fucking killing prostitutes, but then like letting men have sex with 7 year olds. Like, this doesn't fucking make any sense. Like,
yeah, the line, because the line is drawn in the scripture. The line's not drawn by common sense.
Where in the fucking, I mean, I've never read the Quran. I've always wanted to, but where does it say that like fucking 7 year olds is fine, but like you can't make a fucking dollar by like, yeah, you know, shaking your tits?
Yeah.
Where does it fucking say that?
I think there's like, I think Kumail Nanjiani has this really funny joke about this. And sorry to add this in at the end of something so horrible, but I guess one of his famous jokes is like in the Quran, it says that women can't drive cars. Mm. And he's like, they had fucking cars back then,
right? Like, they had cars? Like,
he's like, wait, so Henry Ford like adopted that technology?
Yeah.
From the Quran?
The second you said that, I was like, cars? Like,
yeah, it's like, he's like, well, yeah, I guess they had cars. I don't know.
But God said no.
Yeah, so see, it's all fucking,
it's all fucking stupid. Like, not just on them, but like any fucking people that like make fucking rules based off religion. It's all fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Okay, so, oh God. Okay, what a fucking tonal shift. So, what a funeral he had.
Oh,
is what we're going to go to.
Oh, boy.
He obviously, okay, so I didn't know in hindsight, but I put he kind of sucks. He really sucked. Mm-hmm. But he was literally, like, not treated like Gaddafi, but Elvis.
Like, yeah, where Gaddafi, they like pissed and shit on him.
Oh,
the whole
they
time,
like
right?
were stabbing
yeah.
his butthole and shit.
They stabbed
and,
his like, butthole. That's right.
This guy, like, oh my God, they could not get enough. Which is just is unreal. Now that I fucking know everything that I know, it makes me like want to just like throw this in the fucking bin. So he dies in 1989. He dies of cancer, which, like, whatever. Like, not to, like, belittle cancer, but he dies of cancer. Mm-hmm.
But it's not, I like, guess, a spectacular death. It's just, like, cancer.
Well, he did have 5 heart attacks in 10 days, which I guess is kind of extreme. Like, you know? Yeah. Like, it's got to be, like, a minor record. But
it's kind of, like, it's almost, like, feels like divine intervention there, kind of, at one point.
Yeah,
like,
God, yeah, it's almost like God just punched him in the fucking chest.
It's like, why won't you die?
Yeah, every fucking time. Just kickstarting it again.
Yeah, for real.
So I guess it wasn't pleasant, but so he finally dies. Okay, so here's the fucking funeral, which I just like, I almost didn't even cover, but then like I read his death anyway, and I was like, oh my God, what? Mm-hmm. Like the events that are gonna take place are
true. Oh. Yes, okay. Yes.
So he dies. About, okay, so remember how we were like, oh, 5 million people showed up for his fucking, like, re-arrival?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you're like, oh, it's like New Zealand, blah, blah, blah. Something like 10.2 million showed up for his fucking funeral.
What? Yeah, doubled?
Doubled. Like, so at his initial, like, what do you call it? Like, the reception, I guess? Like, the...
The wake, maybe?
The wake, yeah, the wake. It was like 2.5 something million. But then like when they were actually like going to bury him, the people were like 10 million people showed up. It was like 3 kilometers worth of people.
Oh my goodness.
To fucking see this guy. It was absurd. So it was in the middle of June. It's fucking blazing hot in the desert.
Yeah.
10 million people. So body heat. Fire trucks were brought in just to spray the people down to keep them from like fucking
right
dying.
Right. Yeah.
So they're literally just like spraying people down to stop fucking overheating. I think weirdly enough, it's gonna sound a little like low key, but I'm like, okay, I guess Mm-hmm. 10 people, only 10, were trampled to death.
Oh, okay. I mean, we're out of 10 million?
Not a bad percentage. But
it's a drop in the bucket, but it's still 10 people.
But 10 people dead.
Yeah.
400 severely injured just from, okay, like, mob mentality type things. But we already saw 400 people killed in a fucking three-day riot before. So,
right, yeah.
Obviously, they don't care as much as when he's arrested as versus when he dies. But so they bring his fucking body in via helicopter.
Oh, can I just real quick? Sorry.
What's up?
I think the scariest parts about like mobs of that size, mm-hmm, is the sanitary effects that a mob that size has.
What do you mean?
Where are these people going to the bathroom?
Oh, you're just saying there's poop everywhere.
So in Times Square on New Year's Eve, people actually wear diapers because there's no, really, bathroom around and it's so hard to get out of there and there's no restrooms. So in the blazing heat, it was probably pretty nasty business.
You gotta remember this. He banned alcohol, so no one's drinking.
It's okay, that's true. It's
fucking hot as shit, so they're just sweating everything out, probably.
They're probably just dehydrated, yeah, too.
Yeah, so they're probably not peeing. Because even I know during a hot summer, and I'm drinking, even when, mm-hmm, if I am drinking, I don't even pee a lot.
Yeah, that is a good point. You're
just
right.
Sweating,
you're
right, a lot. Yeah. So they're probably just, like, sweating their own urine on everyone.
Got it. Okay, so maybe it wasn't that bad.
But I'm sure it was pretty gross. Like, I'm sure, yeah, it was disgusting. You're also talking about 10 million people. That's probably, yeah, a lot more than Times Square.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
but on Times Square, very, I get very, very much. That's a lot of drunk people.
Yeah, so that's probably the increase of the urine flow. That's, yeah, hence the
people
diapers.
People really wear diapers.
Yeah, people wear diapers, so they don't have to use the. They could just go on the bathrooms
that's
on themselves.
That's disgusting. I've never, yeah, heard that until now.
Yeah, it's gross.
That's fucking gross. Oh my god, we're gonna talk about that later.
Okay. Sorry to interject. I just thought that was
interesting. No, that's fine. I love learning gross things.
you came to the right place, big boy.
Yeah. It's like you've been back for so long, but I still learn new things about your time in New York. So. Okay, so 400 injured, 10 people trampled to death. His body's brought in via helicopter. I'm imagining it like hanging. I couldn't really tell. I'm imagining it dangling. Okay. Like a fucking, like, someone pulled out of the ocean, like a survivor.
Yeah, I get you.
But it's brought in he's in a wooden coffin, a traditional coffin. And as they try to go bury him, the barriers are all broken. And literally the coffin is torn to shreds from people clawing at it. They rip the coffin apart, literally just trying to, like, touch their fucking, like, deity for the last time. To the point where they destroy the coffin, his body falls out, and they start ripping at his fucking clothes. Like, they start ripping at the shroud that's covering him because they're like, I want to keep this as, like, a relic or a trinket. And they're literally shredding him, like, to the point where, like, one of his bare legs, like, falls out. Like, because they've ripped his fucking pants and everything because, like, they need a piece of this guy to keep. And it takes fucking, like, the military to fucking shoot rounds into the air to clear everyone out. And as they fucking, like, clear people away from the body, they grab the body, they recover it, they put it in a helicopter to get the fuck out. And as they try to lift off, people start fucking climbing onto the landing struts of the fucking helicopter, pulling it down.
What?
It's fucking mayhem. Like,
that's so dangerous.
Literally a zombie movie with zombies grabbing the fucking helicopter. Like, it's fucking nuts.
Did it eventually take off? Or
it got off. They were able to, like, either, like, kick people off or, like, clear them off. But it was able to take off and get out of there. And then 5 hours later, so they still were like, hey, his funeral's still today. Forget all that.
Still gotta bury this motherfucker.
Yeah, they're like, we're not rescheduling. Like, I have shit to do tomorrow. So 5 hours later, they clear the mob as much as they can, clear 10 million people. They bring them back in a steel coffin.
that's using your noggin.
Fucking big fingers up in here. They go back in a fucking metal box and bury him.
Okay.
But in Islamic tradition, the coffin is only for the transport. So he's buried just raw, like a body in the fucking ground. I guess they don't do coffins. The steel coffin is just for transport.
So did they just like exhume him then straight away? If they're willing to desecrate him on site, they're probably willing to dig up his dead dumb bones.
I didn't see they didn't fucking dig him up. Like, I guess once he was buried, they respected him. So, they dumped his fucking naked ass in, and then then the 10 million people were like, okay.
Did you hear this big, like, aw from the crowd? He's in the ground. All right.
He hit the dirt, guys. He hit the dirt.
Guys, everybody go home. He's in.
Go home. Spread it to the back. I can only probably talk to, like, 15 people. Spread it back 10 million.
You ain't got to go home, but you got to get the hell up out of here, buddy.
Yeah,
last call, guys. Last call.
Last call. If you didn't get a piece of his fucking sock, get the fuck out. So that was his fucking funeral, dude. He died like a rock star.
Wow. It's weird to have that many people know exactly what he did and still be a fan of his.
Okay, but it raises a question, though. Did they know?
Did they know? Did they know everything
that he did? Like,
I mean, they're all fans of the same book. So if you're reading the same book, they must have known.
Yeah, maybe they disagree with his like interpretations, but like, do they know that he sent waves of their neighbors to die, or that he fucking like was letting kids get raped? Like, maybe they didn't know.
But like, we can't know, because like, we're allowed to think independently. I mean, you get killed if you think independently over there, so why would you even try it? So of course it's gonna be,
I'm gonna assume they didn't know and they just went with it. I don't know, like,
I mean, maybe some did and they were like, yeah, that's what the book says, he's got to do it.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm assuming they did know, but like, because of the way it was like brought to them, that like, it sounded okay. They're like, well, he talks to God, so it's fine. Like,
I mean, dude, I've been to fucking, you know, churches on Sunday sometimes, like, the people fucking dig it, dude. They fucking love it.
Dude, I mean, like, just like in Jonestown, man, like, sometimes you drink the Kool-Aid. Like,
yeah, they just fucking do it. They just,
Like, I don't get it. And you know who else didn't get it? The fucking million people who left.
Yeah, they were like, this makes no sense.
They didn't get it. They were like, that's not the book I fucking have.
Yeah, we have.
Like, yeah.
Oh, he has a first edition. Yeah, we're working with second edition over here.
Yeah, yeah. The fucking the updated version doesn't say you can fuck my kid.
Yeah.
So like, I'm leaving. Like,
that's the one I'm reading. The one that says, "Don't fuck my child, asshole."
Don't fuck my child, and I'm gonna go have a beer.
I'm gonna have a beer with my child who's not getting fucked and murdered.
Yeah, I'd rather give my 7-year-old a beer than a fucking date.
Like, oh yeah, I mean, you should. Of course, you should be the first one your child has a beer with.
Yeah. So fuck, dude. Like, God, it was like so weird. Like, did like go into part three with the things that you said, and then end on his fucking rock star funeral.
Yeah, fuck him. He's fucking. They literally desecrated him on site. I think that's fucking fair enough, man.
I think they did.
They did the job of justice for us by tearing him apart at the seams on site. Yeah, but at
they
his did funeral.
It they like fucking loved him though. It wasn't like,
well,
I would have liked if I saw one report of some guy fucking stabbed him. Like,
yeah, somebody just stuck a blade in there. Real
one guy with a fucking like kebab stick was like,
yeah. I win.
How do I get out of here?
Where's the nearest exit for real? These people are gonna kill me.
I hope no one saw it.
That'd be great. It was probably Salman Rushdie.
Yeah, he flew in just for that. He was like, "Fuck you, talking shit on my books."
Got a little pocket knife in there, real quick. A little Swiss Army stabbing.
Yeah. A little assassin's blade, like. Oh, geez.
Alrighty.
All right. Well. Oh, that was weird.
Well.
So we'll pass it off to Mark. Correct any of our bullshit, buddy.
Have fun with this one, pal. You're gonna love it.
Eek, yikes. He probably doesn't even know we did this topic yet. So.
Oh, he doesn't. We didn't tell him. Oh,
he doesn't know. Sorry. He's gonna be like, "Who the fuck is this guy?"
Surprise!
Yeah, he's expecting a different guy.
Yeah.
But we made some last-minute changes.
Yeah. Well, follow us on Instagram.
Yeah. Email us if you got any suggestions, or you know, if you don't want to post critiques on Instagram, you can email us critiques. I'll take critiques either way.
Oh, we have I checked the other day. We have 10 new countries too, which is really awesome. Yeah, we have 10 new ones.
I thought we had run out of countries.
No, there's a lot out there. Thanks for everybody across the world listening. Thanks for everybody domestically that's listening, international and domestic.
Want to thank, during our mid-season break, the fucking, the hype, because, we came back with a way bigger, base on that first episode.
Oh, yeah.
Than we left with on the previous season. I know our break was a little longer than normal. So thanks, guys. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, tell everybody you know. Share it with everybody you know. The more people, the better. We're going to make merch soon. Probably not, but we will.
No. We've been talking about, at least, some stickers or something. We're going to work on
it. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get after it.
So, yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right.
I'm Cody.
I'm CJ.
We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, that was weird.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Oh, hey. Didn't see you there. How did you get in here? I'm just kidding. Unlike CJ and Cody, I don't lock my doors. So we both know how you got in here. I thought I would start off the final chapter of this week's episode with a few additions that I found to be interesting while digging around Ruhollah Khomeini's childhood. Born into a family of Shiite religious scholars in the small Iranian village of Khomeini, he later changed his last name to reflect that of his hometown, hence the moniker by which he is more popularly known. If I were to do the same, I guess I would be Mark Bristoli. Anyway, between 1903 and 1918, Khomeini's early life was besieged by tragedy. As an infant, his father, Syed Mustafa Hindi, was murdered. Khomeini was then raised by his mother and aunt Sahiba, both of whom died of cholera in 1918, and the responsibility for the family at that point fell, as it often does in these circumstances, to Khomeini's older brother, Syed Murtaza. Both brothers were avid religious scholars like their forefathers, and both attained the status of Ayatollah, which is given only to Shiite scholars of the highest knowledge. The family also claimed to be direct descendants of the Prophet Muhammad. Now, for this next part, I'm going to give you point A and then steamroll through to point Z. Ian Milligan, a historian at the University of Waterloo, once claimed that there has been a dramatic reshaping of historical practice. And I particularly like this principle because when researching each episode, the famous Winston Churchill, "History is written by the victors" quote always comes to mind whenever we set the time machine back, let's say, more than 100 years. Because it's in these instances that I genuinely believe and see that this was the case. However, with the evolution of journalism, 24/7 news networks, social media, and smartphones, history is being catalogued, documented, and analysed faster than ever before. There's almost no allowance for the romanticism of time to indulge us in myths, as an article on theatlantic.com so eloquently puts it, there is no archive mysticism anymore. So three pieces of material really spoke to me this week, each written across three different decades, that sort of breaks away from this train of thought that I'm on. The first, a CIA memorandum that was originally transcribed in November 1978 and approved for release back in 2004, this intelligent document outlines the politics of Khomeini and the reasons as to why the US should be concerned. It states, his influence is now so strong that neither other clerics nor civilian opposition leaders will take actions that he opposes. It states that his power base is composed of the Shia clergy, bizarre merchants, the urban lower classes, and students. And my favorite contribution to this has to be the fact that it's, of course, 1978 America. So no matter what is happening in the world at that time, they have to find a way to talk about Russia, because quite frankly, we still do that. America has never changed its foreign policy when it comes to Russia. So it goes on to state that Khomeini is anti-communist. So everybody can take a big collective sigh of relief, but his following may be susceptible to communism and radical penetration. He has cooperated in the past with an Islamic terrorist group in Iran, and it, meaning an Iranian regime under Khomeini, would probably not be aligned with either the US or the USSR. The next article was taken from the Washington Post and originally published in 1989. It describes Khomeini as austere and an uncompromising leader who humiliated the United States and transformed his nation from a modernizing regional power into a puritanical religious state. It goes on to highlight the obscure exile that CJ and Cody mentioned, as well as focus on that in his frail final few years, Khomeini remained unwavering in his call for a religious and culturally pure Iran. And lastly, an obituary written in the New York Times and published in 2016. When Ruhollah Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic in Iran, was buried in 1989, 3 days after his death on June 3rd, all international phone lines in the country were cut and international flights were halted. In Iran, mourning the leader of the last great revolution of the 20th century required everybody's complete attention. He founded the world's first and only Islamic Republic governed by a religious political ideology. Iranians are given a four-day holiday every year to commemorate him. So you might be asking, what was the point of all of that? Well, going back to what I originally said about the unromantic new age of history, it feels like that this is actually a rare example where rumor, legend, and folklore is woven into the fabric of this piece of shit's tapestry. It's actually hard to research and spend time learning about Khomeini without finding an article, study, or even an op-ed piece that doesn't somewhat bypass what an ugly and terrifying man he was. Now, I understand that some of this might be because of who Khomeini was and what he stood for. It's all so heavily embedded within religion. And let's face it, religion is an extremely testing and sensitive subject. However, this time machine brings justice, and that is exactly what we served this week. Oh, wait, and one last thing. He also ordered a fatwa, which is essentially an international call for execution within the Muslim faith, of the Indian-British author Sir Ahmed Salman Rushdie, forcing the writer into a 9-year hiding and the need for round-the-clock protection. I know this holiday season is going to be a little different for everyone. I, for one, was hoping to be back in the UK and seeing friends and family. However you choose to spend this festive period, please be safe, look out for one another, and just be a good person. Until next time, goodbye, my friends.